crew compartment of Trakad. Oriramikade RV point, somewhere near the Tapani sector, 2200 hours. Awaiting orders from Admiral Dala.
Will your brother know when you're around? Mirtakev asked. Jaina almost stopped chewing.
Yes, he probably will, she said. We're twins. They say that even non-force-sensitive twins are linked across distance somehow. With Jedi, it's real. Except he disguises his force presence, so I'd never know he was around. You could always follow the trail of bodies, I suppose, Myrta said.
It was going to happen sooner or later. What did you say to someone whose mother had died under your brother's interrogation? Sorry didn't quite cut it.
If there's anything I could do to atone for him, I'd do it, said Jaina. I'll do what I can to stop him doing it again. I'm sorry, by the way, but you know that.
So it's true? He killed your Aunt Mara?
I don't know, Myrta.
Think he's capable of it?
I don't know him anymore. I don't even know where to start.
Myrta leaned her head back against the bulkhead, arms folded. There were a dozen troops in the Trakad assault vessel. Jaina and 11 Mandalorians in full armor, all waiting for the order from Admiral Dala that might not actually come. The other 10 were members of Fett's elite special forces, the Oriramikade, super commandos, the troops who'd saved Kalula Station and her parents from the Yuuzhan Vong.
Elite Orishi Ataldin, Myrta muttered. What's that mean?
Family is more than bloodline. Meaning that families are about who raises and cares for you, not who your birth parents are. Or, put another way, your real relatives can treat you worse than Chikari strangers. Jaina could work out the meaning. She wasn't picking up much of the language, though. Every Mandalorian seemed to be at least trilingual, basic, Mandoa, and Huttese, and they spent a lot of time with their helmets on, talking among themselves. Myrta turned her head and said something to the commandos. A stream of unintelligible words emerged from the helmets, followed by laughter.
It's all they can think about, Myrta muttered. I'm glad it's only once every 5 years. What is?
Galactic Bolo Ball Tournament. It's taken over the Holonet.
Where's Fett?
Slave One. Where else? The small Mandalorian flotilla included Fett's ship, the tank-like Trakad, and a squadron of gladiators and aggressors. The holochart set in the bulkhead showed other vessels idling at the RV point. A carrier, judging by the hatches, and a sentinel landing craft that looked heavily modified. The carrier was tiny, no more than 100 meters long. The minutes ticked away. Jaina had the sense of being in the engine room of an ancient seagoing ship, surrounded by pipes and hydraulic systems, rather than drifting imperceptibly in space. A scraping sound made her look up at the deckhead. One of the overhead hatches opened, and Fett slid down the ladder to land among them.
Docks with Slave One just fine, he said, hooking his thumb in his belt.
They really were testing the Trakad on the job. It didn't seem to faze any of them.
We got mission details now.
It's a go then? Jaina asked.
No, but we know what we have to do when we get the signal.
Fett passed around data chips.
Latest floor plans and layouts here. We'll either be taking out power grids to disable cannon batteries on the orbital yards, as needed, or falling back to Palian ship Bloodfin to defend it if it gets in trouble.
Palian? Even in a little toy turbulent?
It was a woman under the helmet. Then that must have been Isco Talgal. Bevin spoke of her in hushed tones.
What's gonna put a dent in that?
Dala's keen that someone should look out for him, personally.
Does she know something we don't?
Dala has a contingency plan for everything. Somewhere, she's briefing someone to take out the Mandos if we don't behave. That's why she's so hard to kill.
Fett smelled faintly of jetpack fuel and antiseptic. Smells were more noticeable in the cramped compartment.
My personal orders, if you run into Jason Solo, you leave him, unless you really need to kill him. No hunting, no trophies. No avenging the Mandalore. He's Jaina's, when she's good and ready, or else me and Bevin have wasted valuable time on her.
Got it, Mandalore, Kareed said.
Jaina wasn't sure if it was Mandalorian courtesy, or just that Fett wanted her to share some misery by way of general payback. She let it pass. What do you want me to do? You all seem to know what your roles are.
You're the ace pilot, Jedi.
Fett jerked his head in the direction of the aft bulkhead, as if there was something behind him.
Spare Besser leak in the carrier. Up for it?
Can I at least get a look at the controls first? She asked. It's hard learning on the job in combat.
We can test cross-decking to the carrier at the same time.
Fett wasn't joking. The Drakkad pilot brought the vessel down on the deck of the carrier and settled it flush against a hatch. The Drakkad's belly hatch opened. Jaina, feeling like a bug tipped out of a box, jumped down to the deck 5 meters below, easing her landing with the force. 4 dark gray wedge-shaped fighters sat on the hangar deck, a tight fit, and the familiar scent of a hot drive, lube oil, and coolant was reassuring. She stood admiring their lines. It was a pilot's machine, all right. Fett climbed down rungs set in the bulkhead, boots clanging as the spikes in the toe caps caught the metal.
Myrta.
Fett never raised his voice, not even when he called out to someone.
You too.
Leave her to me, Babuir.
Myrta walked up to a Bezulik and pressed something on her forearm plate to open the canopy.
Have we got time to get aloft for a few minutes?
Knock yourself out.
Fett climbed back up the rungs to vanish into the belly of the Drakkad.
Two-seater, Myrta said. Up you get. You're driving.
You're qualified on these?
If you mean can I fly one, yes.
Myrta was up on the airframe and lowering herself into the co-pilot's seat before Jaina had a chance to worry.
Only qualification is not killing yourself. We're not great form fillers in Keldabe.
The canopy clicked into closed position, and the cockpit was suddenly muffled against the sounds outside. Myrta, wedged right behind Jaina's seat, pointed out the drive ignition button.
Push it.
Jaina pressed the button carefully with a cautious fingertip. The Bezulik made a little ack like a living animal's cough, and then the airframe shivered as the initial throaty rumble of the drive rose in pitch to a steady singing pure note. Jaina followed the hand signals of a Mandalorian in bronze armor to roll back and move the yoke intuitively, surprised when the fighter responded as she expected. The hangar deck turbolift lifted. She watched the cross-sections of decks pass the cockpit as they rose and heard the airtight hatches hiss and snap closed beneath them. Eventually, she was looking up at star-dappled space, and she was ready to take off.
Nothing to crash into, Myrta said.
Her arm snaked past Jaina's cheek and pointed at the various instruments.
Almost X-wing panel layout, except the weapon systems are this side. Take her out, Jaina.
Jaina let vague familiarity take over her hands, and her force ability to sense position, and every little nuance of the Bezulik's handling did the rest. She was clear of the small flotilla before she realized it, and getting a sense of how tight the turns could be. It felt wonderful.
Easy to be seduced by it, isn't it? Myrta said.
She meant the Bezulik, that was clear. But Jaina thought of the ease with which she slid toward darkness, and how easy it was starting to feel among these people. How natural to be learning to treat her brother like a bounty. She wondered where the line lay between being open to new ideas and too easily betraying the old.
It's perfect, Jaina said.
Myrta wasn't as hard to read in the Force as her grandfather. The sense of agitation hung in the cockpit.
You think a Jedi healer would really be able to help my grandmother? Can't do any harm. I'll find one. Thanks, Jaina.
She realized she'd ceased to be just Jedi, and even Solo, and was now Jaina. For some reason, that heartened her even more than not being shot on sight as a spy.
Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin, Task Force Assembly Area, off Fondor.
Kytus refused to let his recent brush with Luke rattle his composure as he stepped through the hatch of Bloodfin's hangar, Tahiri at his heels. He'd been duped with a brilliant Falanasi illusion and had his stealth axe almost ripped from under him. That had left him reeling, but not for long. Luke had come after him. That showed how desperately urgent it now was for the Jedi to stop him. Luke was pulling out all the stops.
You seem in a positive mood, Colonel,
said Niathal's voice from some way behind him.
Good to see a spring in your step, so soon after being scraped off your own deck.
Kaidus followed an Imperial aide through the maze of passageways into the citadel of the destroyer, the most heavily protected sections that were the heart of the warship. It was a much smaller destroyer than the Anakin Solo, an unfamiliar layout, with lower deckheads and narrower spaces. When he stopped outside the compartment designated for the meeting, he studied the ship's badge on the bulkhead. Thank you for your concern, Admiral Niathal, he said. The shield depicted a four-legged, fanged creature with cloven hooves like daggers, a blood-red frill raised like a mane along the length of its arched neck. Niathal paused to look as well.
Think of all the extra work that would land on my desk if anything happened to you.
I heal fast. The animal was caparisoned in ancient battle harness, trampling a figure, its own rider, judging by the matching leathers. How ungrateful, a beast trying to destroy the master who guides it safely through the battlefield.
Or unseating him for using the spurs too much.
Niathal inhaled, as if she were savoring the chemical smells of recent work on board.
Lovely thing, a new ship.
Palian emerged from the compartment, creaseless and composed, and fixed a steady dark gaze on Kaidus. It was their first encounter since Kaidus had entered military ranks.
Our eponymous animal, the Bloodfin,
Palian said.
Most apt.
I thought it was just a simple marine predator that was only a threat in its home waters.
A borrowed name, Colonel, because they both share this splendid red appendage.
Palian ran his fingertip over the glowing red pigment.
We once used these Bloodfins as cavalry mounts, because they were ferocious fighters in their own right, with a much greater range than you might imagine. They remain a reminder to us that we should all be careful of the dangerous creatures we ride, because we have to dismount sooner or later. If we're cruel or careless, the beast may even throw us, and once the rider falls under its hooves, it will devour him.
The silence hung like a wait for three beats.
I'm glad we have speeder bikes these days, Tahiri said.
Kaidus went into the meeting, unsure whether Tahiri just couldn't follow the subtext, or if she was much more arch and sly than he realized. He decided on the latter. Once the business of agreeing on plans for the engagement began, personal barbs were temporarily sheathed, and everyone concentrated on the task at hand, which was the isolation of Fondor and the containment of any fleet assets it might still have on its surface. In the absence of the mine net containing surface-based threats, this is a time-consuming task, Kaidus said. I suggest placing 3rd and 4th Fleet fighter wings inside the ring for recce and rapid response to counterattacks from the surface, and a destroyer and frigate flotilla to hit whatever dares raise its head. Meanwhile, we devote the rest of the two fleets to taking out the orbital yard's own defenses, and then land an assault force to secure them. The Imperials will be on the outer ring to counter the inevitable reappearance of the Fondorian fleet. Palian stroked the first knuckle of his forefinger down his mustache, nose to lip, as if lost in thought while he studied the holochart.
The aim is still to take the yards in one piece.
Yes,
said Niathal firmly.
Which, as I'm sure you've made allowance for, means holding the yards long term, which means we also need to hold Fondor itself long term, quite apart from neutralizing its fleet, or else we'll be under siege ourselves on those orbitals.
Palian held up three fingers. He glanced at Tahiri.
Three distinct battles in one, two of them possibly a semi-permanent commitment, unless we can perform a mass lobotomy on the Fondorian government and people overnight and get them to love us.
If you're saying we can't do this, or that the commitment is too much for the Imperial Remnant, then say so. Most expeditionary wars involve entering places where we're far from welcome. That's what wars are. Palian was still stroking his mustache.
I'm just saying that subduing a civilian population is much harder than smashing a fleet.
Not if you project sufficient power, said Kaidus. Palian didn't blink.
Bombing civilian populations can be a desperately slow way of breaking their will, actually. In my very long experience, most don't give in until they're standing in rubble, and there's not even a stick left to fight with. In the shorter term, they just dig in. It's their home. They've nowhere to retreat.
Kytus ignored the lure of an argument. Thoughts? Said Kytus, looking Niathal's way.
I've often fought the urge to reduce a planet to molten slag myself,
Niathal said, unmoved.
Probably for totally different reasons than you, Colonel. But I agree with Gil. Holding what we seize is going to be a drain on resources, unless Fondor shows some pragmatism and rules over. Let's give them an extra reason for doing that, beyond annihilation.
Such as?
Said Palian.
Make it worth their while. They rejoin the GA and play by our rules, and allow a token force to remain for a while to make sure they mean it. And we give them special status. Guaranteed GA work for their yards and factories in perpetuity.
That's not unlike their status under the old Empire, as I recall,
said Palian.
Handy hyperspace lane just for that, too.
Well then,
Niathal said.
We already have a tested plan for making that work, don't we, Gil? An economic occupation is always better than a military one.
Kytus kept a careful eye on the unseen, unspoken negotiation going on right now between Niathal and Palian. He could see the deal shaping, and that it wouldn't include him. Unlike mundane beings, Sith were never shocked by that. They expected and welcomed it. Let's fine-tune our strategy then, Kytus said. We isolate Fondor as planned, begin securing the orbitals, and then see if they're more open to suggestions after we've softened them up for a few hours.
Agreed,
said Niathal.
Remember that there's a surrender deadline in place.
I agree,
said Palian. Kytus felt he needed to keep a closer eye on the two of them, but that was what prospective apprentices were for. He had a battle to win. Would you object to Lieutenant Vela remaining in the Bloodfin as my liaison for the duration of the engagement, Admiral Palian? Of course, you're welcome to send liaison to the Anakin Solo as well. Palian's mistrust was clear to Force senses, but he smiled convincingly enough for the mundanes.
You could use a comlink,
he said,
but she's much more charming.
Tahiri escorted Kytus down the hangar, leaving him with a Force impression of a mask held firmly in place.
How do I liaise? She asked pointedly, lips barely moving.
Observe.
And what added value can I bring that a remote holocam can't? If Palian interferes with my plan in any way, then you stop him.
Kytus left her standing in the passageway, hands clasped behind her back, next to the badge of the Bloodfin devouring those who forgot how dangerous an animal it was. Two of the Anakin Solo's bridge chronos, one set to local time, one to Galactic Standard Time, crept forward to 2359 GST. One comm channel on each flagship's bridge was kept open for Fondor's president, but the deadline came and went, and all Kytus could hear was faint static. Ocean, Bloodfin, and the Anakin Solo were linked on audio, still waiting. Neville walked slowly around the bridge, glancing over shoulders at tracking screens and sensor displays.
Well, I wasn't expecting a response,
Niathal said.
All ships, we're now at battle stations. I expect this will now be known as the Second Battle of Fondor. I shall be operating from this command information center until further orders.
The Anakin Solo moved on Fondor. On either flank, vessels from both GA fleets moved into formation, and one battle group with its X-Wing squadron streaking ahead of it broke out of the larger formation to slip past the ring of orbitals. Kytus felt around him for the Jedi, not picking up what he expected. He knew they were here, because Luke was, but he couldn't sense how many or where they might be. He assumed the worst, maybe as many as 100, maybe the majority in stealth X's. Ocean was where he expected her to be, to port and a little astern of him. I can keep an eye on you, however busy I am, Admiral. Neville turned to him.
Long range, sir. Fondor's ground defenses are scrambling.
Sensors picked up a hailstorm of fighters scattering out into the planet's orbit, and Kytus concentrated his touch on the minds of the commanders about to encircle the planet. The first wave of X-Wings streaked beneath the orbitals, targeting the defensive cannon emplacements on the yards as they passed. The wave of frigates and destroyers split horizontally to send one group under the orbit of the yards in a loop toward Fondor's southern pole, and the other mirroring it to the north pole. With the X-wings keeping the yard's defenses busy, the warships regrouped inside the orbital ring. Fondorian fighters swung around to engage them like a flock of garbs turning as one bird. "Steady," said Kytus.
"Push through! Push through!"
Fondor's planetary defenses hadn't opened up yet, although the ships were in range. The yards weren't there to defend the planet. Their armament was for their own protection. The flotillas were through, scanning the surface of Fondor for cannon and turbolaser aimed at them, waiting for enemy targeting to try to get a lock on them and blip their sensors. There should have been the start of a bombardment by now. Kytus felt something. He knew what it was a moment after it pressed like a weight behind his eyes. It was the sudden surge of drives, tension peaking, thousands upon thousands of beings exploding into action. It was the Fondorian fleet. In the slow-motion way of thoughts in battle, he had time somehow to wonder why sensors weren't showing him ships popping out of hyperspace and targeting weapons all around him. Then he saw why, with his own eyes, on the monitors. The orbital yards had come alive in an instant. Destroyers lifting clear of docks, smaller vessels forming up around them. Kytus felt the precision of the maneuver without needing to see the rapidly changing transponder icons on the holochart. Half of the ships focused on the GA elements now stuck between Fondor and the ring, and the other half turned their attention to the rest of the task force beyond. The Fondorian fleet, or a very large part of it, boiled out of the yards like cag bugs pouring from a broken drain. The sensor scans went wild.
"Why didn't I feel them before? At such close quarters?"
Jedi. That's where they were, putting all their effort into blocking his senses, no doubt persuading themselves that they were defending the civilian workforce or the orbitals.
"Incoming. Brace, brace, brace!"
But despite shields, the turbo laser volleys that struck the Anakin Solo were enough to fill the view screen with brilliant, blinding white-gold light. Kytus took it in his stride. This was meant to be, to put him in the right frame of mind to win. He reached out to his commanders and imbued them all with a little more aggression, a little less willingness to play by the rules of engagement. Neville, looking at Kytus' face, seemed frozen to the spot.
"Ah, my eyes have changed. Golden Sith eyes," Kytus thought. "They'd have to get used to that."
"Captain," Kytus said, "at least we know where they are, and why I didn't sense that they were waiting for us."
Second Battle of Fondor. Combat Information Center, CIC. Galactic Alliance Warship, Ocean.
Niathal stood with both hands braced on the holochart table in the CIC, dismayed. The removal of Jason Solo would have to wait. Fondor was putting up a credible fight, and it was turning into a long slog, longer than she'd expected. The mind network would have made life so much simpler. But she'd taken her decision, and now she had to deal with it. Admiral Macon, stranded here with her because the battle was too fierce for him to transfer back to Sarpentia, drummed his fingers on the edge of the table as he moved around it, examining it from every angle.
"Admiral Niathal, I intend to break this stalemate before we lose too many ships."
Jason's voice had an edge to it.
"I suggest we disengage and regroup."
"We will not run."
"I said regroup."
"And then what?"
They watched the Anakin Solo's blue icon moving steadily through the three-dimensional plot, making for Fondor.
"He's not a team player, is he?"
Admiral Macon said quietly.
"Colonel Solo!"
Niathal rarely knew which way Jason would jump in a fight, and he was getting more unpredictable every time.
"Colonel, can you hear me?"
There was the faint chatter of static.
"Yes, Admiral."
"Please confirm your position and intentions."
"I'm advancing."
"Yes, I can see that. Why?"
"To bring this to a quicker conclusion, I'm going to target Oridan City."
"The ground batteries, you mean? Can you identify targets a little more precisely, please?"
"I mean Oridan City, as in capital. Commercial capital, strategic target capital."
"Wait one."
Niathal switched the comm through to Bloodfin, cutting Jason out of the circuit.
"Gil, can you follow this?"
"Yes. He'll have to get the planetary shield down first, and we've got our hands full with the Fondorian fleet, so he's on his own.
If he didn't have a ship's company of decent beings with him, I'd be rooting for the Fondorians to do us a favor,
she said.
He treats that ship like it's his stealth. This fighter ace mentality infuriates me.
You can't stop him, and we have our hands full.
I've just seen your sitrep.
Yes, Char. 2 destroyers and 8 cruisers. Even we notice those losses.
Anakin Solo, Fondor in a cordon.
The Anakin Solo was in a hurry and plowed between 2 orbitals on a direct course for Auradin. A wave of fighters broke from an attack on the cruiser Armistice, pounding away with turbo lasers at a yard that was venting gases into the atmosphere and headed for the destroyer. He didn't need the tracking screen to feel the ships. He was fully battle-aware now, sharing his channeled anger to embolden the commanders and his fleet, and able to shut out anything that was irrelevant to the situation at hand.
Sir, Neville seemed to be agitated by the battle link. Sir, I'd appreciate it if you share your plans for breaching Fondor's shield, because with the power we've got available, we're going to be hammering away for hours to weaken it.
Captain, keep monitoring the shield, and as soon as you see it drop, set 10 concussion missiles to airburst over Auradin, and 2 over the shield generator plant. Kaidus made an effort to sound detached and normal.
Very well, sir.
Kaidus sat down in one of the command seats and watched the disk of Fondor gradually filling the viewscreen, until it had no sharply contrasted frame of black space left. Kaidus saw what the Fondorians operating the shield facility might see. He had no idea what the actual location looked like, but he didn't need to waste his strength projecting his consciousness to actually observe. Any imagined scene would do to focus him as the torrent of anger and raw nerves of 100 or more commanders poured back through him. He pictured the shield generator plant, the control room, imagining it much as any other power plant in the industrialized galaxy. A wall covered in readouts and status lights, and rows of consoles around him where other workers kept an eye on the integrity of the shield and ensured that a constant power level fed it. There would be a message system, possibly an illuminated board updating staff on the security alert level too. The exact details didn't matter, he knew, as long as he could imagine enough about what was happening in their minds to be able to latch on to some breeze of a thought in the Force and slip into their world. It was like listening for a particular noise or vibration when tuning a speeder drive. Kaidus dropped into that white noise of the feelings and thoughts of billions on Fondor and heard the one repeating note out of kilter with the rest. He focused. In seconds, it filled his head to the exclusion of all else. He was aware of solid, real beings moving around him on the ship, but he was now more aware of the shield generator facility 5 kilometers east of Auradin and the minds of the control room team. The fleet needs to shelter. Kaidus concentrated on projecting an impression that the GA fleet and its allies had been driven off, and now ships needed to return to base under the protection of the shield. Open up. Let us in. He flooded the operators' minds with an urge to get the ships to safety as soon as possible. Now, drop the shields. We're going to crash. Let us through, for pity's sake. Help us.
Shields down.
It wasn't Neville's voice, but that of the weapons officer. Kaidus was still drifting in that fog of minds, drowning in their panic and urgency, and not here with the ship that was going to unleash their worst nightmare.
Conch section, fire when ready.
Kaidus tried to snap back at the moment the airburst sent a blinding, searing shockwave across the packed city, but he was a fraction too late, and he caught a moment of pure animal terror that took his breath away. He jerked alert in his seat, wanting to complete a scream that wasn't his. He caught it in time. If he'd screamed, well, the crew thought he was crazy anyway. On the monitor, he could see a fireball spreading and debris billowing up into the atmosphere on a plume of rolling smoke. Now he needed other GA vessels to turn toward the planet and press home their advantage. He wondered if he could even move. He was drained, and for a moment he couldn't even grip the arms of his seat.
Sir?
Kaidus looked up into Neville's face.
Sir, Admiral Niathal is on the comm.
Tell her to wait. We need to hit Fondor hard now, before their fleet closes in on us.
Galactic Alliance warship Ocean, off Fondor.
Jason wouldn't take Niathal's comm, but she wasn't sure she'd believe what he told her anyway. The holochart changed before her eyes. One moment, the inner cordon was a tangle of blue and red transponder icons, and the next, the red icons were separating out fast and heading for the planet.
"Tell me this isn't a feint," she said. "If they're playing dead and he's fallen for it, we're balked. If Fondor's scamming us,"
Macon said quietly,
"they're taking the special effects a little too seriously."
He touched Nyathol's arm to get her attention.
"Look!"
Some X-Wings had penetrated Fondorian space, far enough to get detailed aerial reconnaissance of the ground. Visuals were confusing. Some showed steam roaring high into the air from the shattered tunnels that ran under the whole of Fondor's surface. Others were just thick, dark smoke, spreading, filling the frame like thick, folded fur, and it was hard to work out what was happening until she switched to thermal image, and that was much clearer. Oridin. Was it really Oridin? Was burning. It was a ball of searing temperatures that cooled toward the edges, with irregular projections as if a firestorm was being fanned farther. That was exactly what she was seeing, the aftermath of a massive airburst. Fondor certainly wasn't putting that on for a show.
"Bloodfin, this is Ocean,"
she said.
"Gil, are you still there?"
"Clever trick,"
Palian said. His tone was wary. He had company this time.
"I have Lieutenant Vela here, and she's been explaining some of the basics of the Force to me."
"Jason's destroying Oridin. I'm coming Vard and offering terms."
"Are you asking for my opinion or telling me?"
"I'm Joint Chief of State, and I don't think my colleague is in a position to negotiate, seeing as he's busy fighting his ship."
She turned to the flag lieutenant she was usually assigned in Ocean, Vio.
"Flag, get me the Fondorian president."
Shas Vaad took a little longer to respond than she had expected. It was the first time it had crossed her mind that she was lucky to raise him at all, because there was every chance he'd been based in Oridin. But he was alive. The holoscreen image showed him in a harshly lit room that could have been an emergency planning center with people milling around behind him, many in administrator's uniforms.
"Admiral," he said, "we're on backup generators here, so make the most of this comlink. The power grid's out in 6 cities in the Oridin region. Oridin itself, well, I'm sure you can see the results of your handiwork."
"We can stop this now. Surrender now. We both recall our fleets. And I personally guarantee you that Fondor will get permanent special economic status and will aid you in disaster recovery as soon as you say the word."
"What about Solo? Is he going to go along with this?"
"I'm not asking his permission."
"We surrender,"
Vaad said at last.
"Call off your ships, I'll call off mine."
He turned and said something to someone behind him.
"Give it a few minutes to reach all ships. Ceasefires can be ragged, as I'm sure you know."
Nyathol waited, and as soon as the reports started coming in off Fondorian vessels breaking off attacks, she opened the comm to every bridge in the fleet.
"All Galactic Alliance and Imperial Remnant vessels, cease fire immediately. Cease fire. Fondor has surrendered."
The only ships still moving on the screens were the Anakin Solo and its accompanying frigates. Nyathol was anxious for Fondor not to get jumpy. She let Vaad hear the voice traffic.
"Anakin Solo, this is Ocean. Respond, please."
"What are you doing?"
Jason's voice sounded as if he'd been woken up from a deep sleep and was annoyed about it.
"You can't stop now."
"I've accepted Fondor's surrender. They've stood down their ships. Unless you can render aid to the planet right now, Jason, withdraw and return to the assembly area."
"We broke through."
He paused.
"I broke through. I intend to carry on fighting."
There was a pause.
"Neville, where's the captain? Find him. I'll have him."
"Colonel Solo, if you don't honor the ceasefire, I'm relieving you of duty. An admiral outranks a colonel, remember, and I will order your ship to be disabled."
There was a pause.
"I don't recognize your authority."
"Stand down, Colonel!"
"All GA vessels, this is your Chief of State ordering you to fight on. All Imperial vessels, under the terms of our agreement, I insist that you rejoin the battle."
"All GA vessels, Colonel Solo is relieved of duty."
On the chart,
A battle group of amber icons began to move toward Fondor. Some of the Imperial commanders had heard and heeded him, at least. Palian's voice boomed over the bridgecom.
The Imperial fleet will withdraw immediately and respect the ceasefire. Wyvern battle group, resume your position at once.
The amber icon slowed to a halt.
We now take our instructions solely from Admiral Nyathol.
Ma'am, said the comm officer, hovering at her elbow. Shaz Vod's defense secretary is on comlink, asking what you expect her to do if the Anakin Solo opens fire again.
Tell her I won't regard self-defense as a breach,
Nyathol said.
But if Jason Solo opens fire first, then I'll have to take him out.
Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin, off Fondor. Command Center.
These beggars belief, Moff Rosette said. The GA is falling apart in front of our eyes. This is their highest level of command and political decision-making, screeching at one another in the middle of a battlefield, about to slug it out, and we're committing Imperial citizens' lives to defend their interests, in the hope that they'll keep their promises? Are we mad?
Palian considered what he'd do in Nyathol's position, because he was walking a knife edge himself. Grand Moffs and some leaders of the council cliques had gathered in Bloodfin to pick over the warm remains at this bizarre halftime interval. Palian knew that some of the Moffs would rather obey Jason, but that they'd seen sense at the last minute.
I admit they're not impressing me with their cohesion, Palian said. But we withdraw and we wait. Now's the time to concentrate on getting rescue parties deployed and to see which hulls we can salvage.
Tahiri Vela watched silently. She reminded him increasingly of the Philips that the Yuuzhan Vong had used as communication channels. Living creatures like disembodied eyes that saw and heard everything, bonded to their users from birth like hatchling Nuna. He stared at her until she moved away to the far side of the compartment.
Solo can't retain power after this,
Grand Moff Seralt whispered.
He's totally discredited now. Is Nyathol going to honor the Borleos Bilbringi agreement, though?
We won't know for now, Palian said. Chances are that she will, because she's a pragmatist and she needs our muscle. First things first, though.
Moff Quill didn't take the hint.
They're in disarray and Fondor is still restorable, even if it's crippled in places. I'd trade a couple of B-list planets for this.
Quill couldn't even stay loyal to someone who was encouraging him to be disloyal to his own head of state. Palian savored the irony and hoped that Philip Tahiri overheard that little snippet.
They're not in disarray, he said. I'm very clear what we do now, and you will do it. Fondor has surrendered. The fighting is over. We do not take aggressive action now. Do you understand me?
Admiral Palian held the Empire together with the complex net of personal loyalties, the Moff's collective awareness that he was usually right, and a rarely administered but effective dose of retribution for those who didn't play the sensible game. Without that, all he had to enforce his word was his Imperial Service Blaster, not even a massively lethal one.
I said, Moff Quill, do you understand me?
Perhaps not just a blaster, though. Palian did have his backup, but Admiral Dalla wasn't needed yet, certainly not for the primary engagement. There was a lot to be said for keeping his powder dry. He had a concealed personal comlink permanently open to her anyway, so she could hear what he was doing minute by minute, and she was monitoring the battle. 10 standard minutes away, at least she'd gained useful intelligence from being an observer.
Yes, Admiral, Quill backed down. I was just thinking outside the box.
I'm all for creative solutions,
Palian said.
But thinking like that can put you inside a box all too easily. Now, let's see what happens next.
The vessel's stateboard was a worrying tally of too many red lights and the tidy ranks of green that showed ships as operational or with minor damage. The red-lit list showed several of the Empire's largest Star Destroyers badly damaged, 3 with only emergency environment control and drifting, and some of the fighter squadrons had taken 30% losses. The Medrunners were working at maximum capacity.
Sir, the Anakin Solo is moving.
The midshipman at the long-range scan plotted a projected course from the GA destroyer's movements. The young officer tapped his earpiece, Getting quite tense in ocean, sir. He's powering turbo lasers again.
What's he waiting for?
Palin asked Tahiri.
Colonel Solo has exceptional powers, she said. She was blinking rapidly. I don't.
Is he recharging himself? Must take it out of you, bringing down a planetary shield single-handed, without the aid of a decent Death Star.
Her slight flinch made Palin bet on that being closer to the truth than he'd imagined. The midshipman turned sharply, one fingertip against his earpiece, at the exact moment one of the sensor scan operators snapped, "The Anakin Solo's fired!" Then reports flooded in.
Fondorian cruiser Prosperity's taken a direct hit on the bridge, sir. Looks like several enemy vessels responding.
Fondorian fighters.
Ocean, for you, sir.
Palin took the comm, audio only. He hoped Dala was paying attention.
Char, what's going on?
Sorry, Gil, but Solo's not responding to reason, and I can't rely on his commanders to follow me. I'm going in now to put some buffer between him and Fondor, and stop him the hard way. I need your help.
Understood.
Palin turned to the moffs and gestured to the comm officer with a finger to open the fleet-wide channel.
All ships, identify GA vessels not responding to Admiral Niathal, and engage any that attack Fondorian targets immediately. We will honor this surrender as long as Fondor does.
There was a ripple of uncomfortable breaths among some of the moffs.
Are we clear in our purpose, gentlemen?
Yes, Admiral, said Quill. Palin turned for the hatch. A private conversation with Dala seemed a good idea.
I'll be in my day cabin for a few minutes. It's my age.
He swept past Tahiri and strode down the passageway. He slipped into his cabin and secured the lock.
Dala can hear all this anyway. I just want to hear her take on this. She's more at the Jason end of the ruthless spectrum.
Then the hatch opened. He'd locked it. Tahiri Vela stepped in, head slightly lowered as if she was sorry to interrupt him.
Sorry, sir, but I had to speak to you.
Palin felt his nape prickle.
There's always knocking.
Sir, there are lives on the line. If you let the GA tear itself apart, everyone loses.
I'm not letting it do anything, Lieutenant. I'm giving practical support to an ally.
If Colonel Solo is deposed, the GA will revert to its indecisive self, and there'll be chaos.
I'm afraid I can't agree with you, my dear. But then I don't have to. Loyalty is a fine thing. Don't think that I don't respect that. But Jason Solo's the chaos, not the cure.
The comlink to Dala was still open. She'd be finding this amateur routine very amusing.
Is there anything else?
The moffs will break off if you tell them to. Tahiri
took a step back.
I've no reason to refuse Admiral Niathal's request. Subject closed.
Tahiri pressed her lips together and sighed. Mild annoyance, possibly joking. But the GA issue officer's blaster she drew from her belt was quite serious.
Please, Admiral, just do it.
She flicked the safety catch off and aimed it at his chest.
Call off your fleet and give Jason Solo a chance. He needs to win at Fondor.
No.
Palin calculated whether he could draw his weapon before she could fire, if she would fire. But she was a Jedi and a third his age. A horrible certainty gripped his gut.
I won't ignore a surrender, and I won't enable the bombardment of civilian centers afterward. And I will not lend the Empire to a petty despot.
You know you're going to die, said Tahiri.
I'm 92 years old. Of course I'm going to die, and quite soon. But it's how I die that matters to me. Please, get out of my cabin.
Last chance,
Tahiri leveled the blaster.
All you have to do is call a halt. The moffs obey you.
Palin opened his comlink.
Palin to fleet,
he said. Tahiri paused.
Fleet, this is Admiral Palin. I order you to place your vessels at the complete disposal of Admiral Niathal and take down Jason Solo for the honor of the Empire.
The blaster bolt hit him square in the chest and flung him back against the bulkhead. The pain was so fleeting that he was sure he was already dead. He'd always expected black oblivion, Not this numbness, like getting a crushing kick from a faulty power circuit. Tahiri leaned over him, eyes wide, the smell of blaster and burned fabric clinging to her. He wasn't dead yet.
So that's Jason's new Sith Order,
Palian whispered.
Wiping out civilians from a safe distance and getting a child to kill an old man. Just make sure you can dismount from that blood fin of yours.
Tahiri looked concerned. Behind her, Moff Quill leaned through the hatch, tilted his head to stare at Palian, and walked slowly away.
I can save you, Admiral, she said. It's not too late. The heart's a resilient muscle.
Go rot somewhere else, Philip,
he whispered. There were boots in the passageway outside, not running, more shuffling around, waiting impatiently. Tahiri's lighter step faded as she walked away.
Is he gone?
Said a voice that he didn't recognize.
Not yet, said Quill. I'm not going to touch him, so we're totally clean.
Palian whispered.
Quill!
Hoping Dalla could still hear him. Admiral Dalla's fleet would be a lovely surprise. Palian wouldn't spoil it for the Moffs by letting them hear a distress call to her. He managed to fumble for the comlink and place it on the floor, but it was a struggle. He reached for the nearest hard surface and drummed his fingers. Rap, rap, rap. Rap, rap, barap. Palian's pain came crashing back at that moment, like a tidal wave that had hung motionless for a split second. And yes, he'd been right all along. It was black, black oblivion after all.
Anakin Solo, inside Fondorian space.
Kytus felt stronger now, but the raw energy of the battle link with his commanders, built up and discharged into the minds of the Fondorian shield technicians, hadn't yet returned. Exhausted, he had to rely on the natural skill of the commanders who'd rallied to him. Two Fondorian frigates circled the Anakin Solo, pounding the shield generator dome.
Sir, the Imperial Remnant! The fleet is turning toward us, and Lieutenant Vela is calming you!
Kytus was too thinly stretched to read much from her in the Force. Was the Remnant joining the battle to finish him off?
Lieutenant, go ahead.
Sir, Admiral Palian is dead, and the Imperial Remnant is rejoining your forces.
She said it calmly, as if it were a routine thing to have achieved. Kytus gestured to Inindrar to take over and moved to a comm station where he wouldn't be overheard. Did you finish the job yourself, Tahiri?
I shot him, sir.
You've probably saved the Galactic Alliance. Are you ashamed, Tahiri? Are you ashamed because you killed an old man? Tahiri didn't answer for a moment.
It's not quite the heroic role I had in mind.
But you did it.
Yes.
Tahiri, in the long term, it's easier to kill a powerful enemy than it is an apparently weak one. If you bring down a giant, you're a hero. If you kill something weak, even if it has to die, then you endure contempt. Being willing to be despised to serve the common good, that's the mark of a true Sith. You're going to make a fine apprentice for me, Tahiri.
Oh, I'm official then.
You may call me Darth Kytus. I shall be known only by my true name from now on.
Yes, my lord.
And I'll come for you, Tahiri. I won't abandon you. The tide had turned. Kytus sensed another cog turn, shifting every part of the whole machine of existence.
Sir, the senior Imperial commanders want your orders, Inindrar said, as if he'd repeated it several times before and got no response.
Let's give Nyathal the fight she wants, then. Three Imperial cruisers moved in to open up a furious barrage on the frigates harassing the Anakin, catching one in a cross-stream of turbolaser fire that ripped through its top solar fin. He had the GA on the back foot. It was numbers, always numbers. And now, he had more.
Said Loxen, still at his post after all these hours. Sir, more ships dropping out of hyperspace.
Kytus turned, eager to see what else the Imperials had thrown into the battle. What's that? He didn't recognize the vessel, and it didn't carry the Imperial livery. An auxiliary?
A fleet tender?
Ships began popping out of hyperspace in flares of white light, and as the transponders began kicking in and the sensors pinged others, Kaidus knew the Jedi were back with one of their mind games. He was on the receiving end of another elaborate Jedi mind assault. "It's Skywalker," Kaidus said. "Try to filter these aberrations out from the real threats. It's hard, but that's how he wants to decoy you, to get you firing carelessly." None of the ship's transponders registered pennant codes on the system. There was only so far that Luke could go in embroidering this fantasy. Then, the two young officers tried to identify the vessel by class alone, as if it was some cadet instruction at the Naval Academy. There were now two Crusader cruisers, a Victory-class Star Destroyer, and a squadron of TIE fighters. A Venator and two Republic-class ships dropped out at exactly the same moment, like a choreographed party surprise of the very worst kind.
"Sir?"
It was very convincing. It was exactly like the previous attempt, except more imaginative, and the feeling of real mass and power was detectable now.
I think this might be real."
An assassin broke out of formation, blinding white power streaming from its cannon. A GA carrier moving X-wings into position exploded, the whole aft section swallowed in a ball of expanding light.
It was no illusion.
Loxon seemed to have had enough of humoring his commander.
"That's really dead, sir."
"Sorry to argue, but that's real. It's absolutely real."
"I'm losing concentration. I've got to stay sharp. Where in the name of the Force did these come from?"
"Yes, it is. So come about and ready torpedoes." Flaring into existence like the avenging swoop hawk that the Jacipri sages said would herald the end of the universe, an Imperial Star Destroyer was now on a ramming course for the Anakin Solo. It had an identifiable pennant code.
"Sir, it's I-2. Oh, that can't be right,"
said Duv Horlo. Kaidus took a slow breath. He recognized it too, but this time he believed. She was never confirmed destroyed. It was a vessel that had been flagship to the legendary admirals of modern history and fought at some pivotal battles. She was fully restored, Kaidus thought.
"Chimera," said Kaidus.
"Sir, someone's emptied the whole galactic junkyard and then some."
"You know what we girls are like,"
said a slightly rasping patrician voice over the open comm.
"We just can't throw anything away in case it comes back into fashion years later."
"You have me at a disadvantage, madam."
"My apologies, Colonel Solo. Where are my manners? This is Admiral Dalla, flag officer of the Maw Irregular Fleet, and I ask that you stand down and leave Fondorian space. Now."
I knew she was back on the list, but the Moffs need to improve their intelligence gathering, Kaidus thought. "As Chief of State of the Galactic Alliance, I'm afraid I can't do that." Kaidus summoned his overstretched battle meditation skills. "Flight, stand by 5-7 and 5-9 squadrons."
"As you please, sir," said Dalla.
"Maw Fleet, patch into Admiral Nyathol's combat information center and give the lady a hand."
A Moff's voice came over the comm, unhelpfully late.
"We knew Palian had recalled her for something underhanded."
"Good afternoon, you insignificant little man."
The satisfied polish to Dalla's voice was tarnished by some pain and regret, though. Kaidus heard it. Chimera opened fire. The battle with Dalla's scrapyard fleet had begun.
Mandalorian boarding party. Assault ship, Aura, approaching Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin, accompanied by Trakaad.
"What would you like to be today?"
Orade said, scrolling through the list of spoof transponder codes for the assault vessels.
"Hopelessly lost Nalestian freighter? Fuel browser? Death Star?"
"HNE Combat Broadcast Unit," Kerrid said. "Nobody swerves to avoid them, but they're not tactical targets. Plenty around, and they get in stupid positions."
Fett had to admire Dalla's timing. Imperial ships that had been protecting Bloodfin from predatory strikes while the battle raged inside her now had urgent problems of their own with the arrival of the Maw fleet.
"A lot of trouble to go to for a few morphs,"
Fett said. He now had a link to Bloodfin's mutineers. He thought that term was a delicate legal point if their admiral had been assassinated.
Vitor, what's your situation?
We've rigged the drives and the weapons to blow if anyone tries to board her,
Vitor said.
Once the troops breach our bulkheads, we're finished. We're not equipped for close combat down here.
As long as you don't try to repel us, we'll be fine. Who have you got on board?
The senior moffs on the flag officer staff, and their boss is Quill now, I suppose. The rest of the moffs with command status are still with their ships.
Can we breach the hull and let in some nice cool vacuum without killing you?
No. They'll be in the command center. The Citadel's hardened, anyway. We've activated the fire control bulkheads to seal off the compartments around the Citadel. If you go in via the replenishment hatches, that'll put you much closer to the command center, and you won't have to fight for every meter if you run into company.
And you've got a Jedi on board, Jaina said quietly. Tahiri Vela.
Bloodfin was effectively dead in the water, with all weapons and propulsion offline. It was just a matter of getting to her without attracting too much attention, then boarding, and then neutralizing the troops who were trying to regain control of the ship. Jaina was subdued. It was a bad deal with Palian.
I shouldn't have let you hear Dalla's recording, but when you're hunting scum, Solo, recognizing the voices is part of making sure you kill the right barf.
I'm not squeamish, she said.
Nobody was familiar with the Remnant's new turbulent-class pocket star destroyers, but Dalla had transmitted a deck layout, and its two hangar decks opened at the stern. Fett located the replenishment access.
Vitor, where are the troops?
As far as we can tell, apart from the ones pounding us, they've positioned them at the main exterior hatches. They were relying on the frigates to prevent boarding.
I think Bloodfin just lost top cover.
And look out for Jason Solo. He's probably planning to extract Lieutenant Vela. Good luck, Fett.
Vitor, stand by. Orade, you join Zarumar in the Trakaad.
Orar was a little under 40 meters long, and in the shoal of ships 10, 20, 30 times larger, she was a small target to pick up visually. A transponder trace showing her to be an HNE broadcast unit getting way too close to the action in this chaotic battle meant that by the time anyone checked what she was doing, coming so close to Bloodfin's stern, it would be too late. Trakaad, even smaller, trailed behind her. Orar crept along the port side to settle over the replenishment hatches and clamped herself to the hull. The belly hatch of the assault ship opened, and they were looking at an aperture not quite 2 meters wide. The replenishment hatch opened onto a storage compartment with access to the main deck of the destroyer. Jaina emerged from the hatch in the middle of a stream of armored troops, a small figure in gray with a lightsaber hilt in one hand and a blaster in the other. "I'll locate Tahiri," she said. The ship was in semi-darkness, lit only by dim green emergency lighting in most passageways. With visor enhancements, Fett and his troops could see a lot more. Jaina shot off down the passage with all the confidence of someone in broad daylight. Fett and Carrot reached the hatch that opened directly onto the command center section. Jaina was already there, flat against the bulkhead.
"I'm sensing about 30 beings in there, and definitely a Jedi," she said. "They've barricaded themselves in. The only way they're getting out is via the same hatch as we enter."
"Let's do it then."
"In three," said Carrot. "One, two, go!"
A stream of concentrated blaster fire took the hatch off its clips, and it fell into the passage beyond, wedged on the combing like a safety ramp. Fett laid down covering fire as six of his Ori Ramakade rushed in and dived on the deck, firing from prone positions and meeting a returning hail of blaster bolts. The moffs weren't going down without a fight. In the noise and chaos, with even his HUD display sometimes overwhelmed by the volume of flashing blaster fire, Fett was unnerved to see Jaina Solo, a small woman by any standards, deflecting bolts with a lightsaber and with nothing but a gray fabric flight suit for protection. He'd have to remember to tell her one day how impressive it looked.
Galactic Warship Ocean, off Fondor.
Chimera cut a swath through the battlefield and headed straight for the Anakin Solo, firing turbo lasers.
"They say that Dalla tore up the strategy books."
Niathal was still assessing the strength and firepower of the eclectic fleet that had just fallen into her lap. Her immediate guess was that she now had 30% more hulls than the Moff Jason fleet, as she now thought of it.
"She looks as if she's going to ram him." I'd get out of her way,
Macon said. Several other commanders in Jason's fleet must have had the same idea. They broke off attacks and headed for the Anakin Solo. There were now six warships converging on the Chimera, and Nyathol tried to guess Dala's strategy.
Yes, she's going to turn as late as she can,
said Nyathol.
Even so, I wouldn't be the frigate on that bearing there.
One destroyer bearing down on Chimera's port beam appeared to be targeting her bridge, and a cruiser was on an intercept course from starboard. Chimera opened fire on both simultaneously, with apparently little effect, and held her course.
What was that, Vio?
Nyathol asked.
Turbo laser?
Unknown, ma'am. Nyathol, still monitoring the developing collision, moved to watch one of the holocam feeds from the remotes nearest the Anakin Solo. Chimera was letting smaller vessels take pot shots at her, which her shield shrugged off, and then she simply targeted the same two vessels that she'd returned fire upon moments earlier. Nyathol waited for signs of impact. What she saw instead was the hull of one ship deforming and then simply bursting apart like a bag of grain meal, with no accompanying explosion. The aft section was intact, but there was a large enough hole in the hull to span five decks, maybe more, and expose compartments to vacuum. It was an oddly silent, unfit end for the cruiser. It rang a bell with Nyathol.
Oh, I think Dollar's brought some of her toys with her,
Macon said.
Yes, I do believe she has some novel weapons.
Nyathol calmed the Maw flagship.
Ocean to Chimera, thank you for your assistance. Are you armed with unconventional weapons?
Ocean, confirm that. We have metal crystal phase shifters, among other things.
MCPS weapons altered crystalline structures. An area of the unfortunate destroyer's hull had simply fractured under the stresses and started to break up. It was as good as a laser strike, but penetrated shields.
Thank you, Chimera. Dollars dusted off some of the research projects from the Maw installation,
Macon said.
No telling what she's got now.
Jason surely had to be able to detect what Nyathol could, and more with his force senses. And he would know that he was dealing with tactics and weapons he'd never faced before, and the Anakin Solo was now exposed. The battle group ranged around. It was being picked off in an eerily peaceful but equally lethal way. No spectacular explosions breaching hulls, but large voids from crumbling, altered metals that had lost their strength. Nyathol chose her moment to calm all ships.
Commanders of the GA 3rd and 4th Fleets who have chosen not to accept my command, this is your opportunity to rejoin the legitimate forces of the Galactic Alliance. Power down your weapons and withdraw now to the designated fleet assembly area. I will not, repeat, not take disciplinary action against any commander who withdraws now.
GA Warship Anakin Solo, off Fondor.
So, she thought she could play that game, did she? Kaidus thought.
Sir, we've got no countermeasures for whatever that is.
Commander Inundrar darted from sensor screen to sensor screen, checking the data scan from stricken ships.
My guess is that's a phase shifter.
Identify which of Dala's ships has it and concentrate fire on them, Kaidus said. Break off the attack on Fondor. Throw everything we've got at Dala, and I mean everything, even ships responding to distress calls.
This might be a prudent point for a tactical withdrawal to regroup, said Inundrar. Reassess the situation.
What shape are we in?
Half the fleet has taken some damage, and we've lost more than 30 vessels, sir.
Kaidus was losing. If he delayed, he could lose most of the fleet. Commander, identify an assembly area, and order ships that can jump and that aren't responding to emergency signals to do so. He was now fighting a battle on three fronts. Not only the ad hoc coalition ranged against him, but a weapon he wasn't yet equipped to resist, and a traitor urging his ships to mutiny. All ships, this is Colonel Solo. Admiral Nyathol is acting illegally, and I call on you to remain loyal to the Galactic Alliance. Signal your intentions and stand by for orders.
What are you going to do, sir?
Inundrar asked. If they're loyal, give them a second RV point to jump to, Kaidus said.
And get me a med sprinter. We've got more calls on medevacs than we can.
Lieutenant Vela is trapped in Bloodfin, and I won't leave her. Nobody will fire on a med sprinter. Get me a med sprinter in a corpsman's uniform.